Pistons with the drive and the feed. Maker three. Rebound by Antetokounmpo.
Struggling. Thon Maker has struggled as well. 0 for 11 now from threes for Maker.
NBA Straya. How you going? That's right, man. It is NBA Straya. It is Tuesday, April 23. How was your Easter break, mate? Was it a bit rough going back to work today? I'll tell you what. That's right, man. I am your host, James Clements. I'm a writer for Rolling Stone, Triple J, Junkie, Red Bull Mag, and whoever else wants to fling some of that walking around stuff my way. And I'm here in Larry Armour Studios to give you the lowdown on who's doing what, where they're doing it, why they're doing it, of course, who's doing it better than Lonzo Ball in the NBA playoffs today as we break down, wrap up after every single day of NBA action while repping Straya just a little bit. It's what we do. All right. So a couple of potential elimination games to cover today. Only one of them ended up being an elimination. We had Giannis versus Detroit. Donovan Mitchell destroying the Rockets. The Suns doing something dumb. There's a whole bunch of good stuff to get into. So that's going to be covered with all the usual dumbassery. If that's not a knife, old mate, no mate, spud of the night, better than Lonzo Ball. Of course, there's Yeah Nah, there's the unpopular opinion of the day, and there's Outback Takehouse, where we're serving up a flame grill take. We've got a brand new sweaty, hairy guy of the week today, and there's a look at the odds and a pick and preview for all the potential closeout games tomorrow. We've got a lot of them. And then we're going to finish off with the brand new Jingles HR. Jeez, that's a lot, isn't it?
It's a bloody Tuesday, mate. What's going on?
All right, let's get stuck in. It's NBA Straya episode 270. Let's go.
This is Mitch Creek, and you're listening to NBA Straya.
Watch out for the Shaq attack.
Wah! You better. Or you better watch out for the attack of the flying Giannis Antetokounmpo. If you're Kung Fu Thon Maker, that's right. The best mates. Doesn't stop Giannis from being, you know, oh, there you are, Thon. I'm going to smash it. How do you like that? Thon's getting obliviated by Giannis left, right, and center. You better watch out also for organizational structures. If you're the Phoenix Suns, because that's right, they fired their coach. That doesn't smack of anything weird. Anyway, we're going to start today's show the way we start every show here in NBA Australia with the daily whip around. That's right, the Phoenix Suns fired their first-year head coach, Igor Kostkov, according to league sources around the NBA. That's right, man, the Suns had been planning to bring back Kostkov for his second season. They're like, oh, they played pretty good in the second half of the year. What do you reckon? And Igor over there, everyone's like, oh, he's pretty bloody good, mate. Yeah, not too bad. But it turns out Phoenix like, ah, shit. I think we actually want Monty Williams to be our coach. And Monty Williams is like, motherfucker, I'm still like with Phoenix, with Philly. And like the Lakers want me and a bunch of other places want me. So I don't know. And Phoenix like, we'll fire our guy. what a clown car franchise they are. That's right. Other news, Joey Tsai, Nets owner. He was fined $35,000 by the old NBA for backing up his GM, basically. The NBA termed it detrimental to the NBA. It's after Joey tweeted out, my partners and I have spoken and the entire Nets ownership group support our GM, Sean Marks, for protesting the wrong calls and missed calls. NBA rules are rules, and we respect that, but our players and fans expect things to be fair. I love it. He's only worth $10 billion, so $35,000, what's that? 20 cents? I'll pay that just to back up my owner, back up my GM, and make everybody think I'm a fucking tough guy. Love it. Onion, Joey Tsai. Much worse news. Luke Walton has been sued for sexual assault by Kelly Tennant, former LA Sportsnet host slash reporter. According to TMZ, he's being sued for sexual assault. Basically, Kelly Tennant claims that he forced himself on her in his hotel room before he was head coach of the Lakers. So apparently he asked her to come meet him in his Santa Monica Hotel to discuss the book that she was writing. Apparently they had a business relationship dating back a few years. She's like, hey, can you write a forward for me, Luke? And he's like, I'll write you a forward. With my dick! Oh! And Kelly Tennant's like, no thanks. Fuck off, you weird creepo. And Luke's like, nah, gone. And no dice. Apparently, when she arrived at the hotel, he convinced her to come up to his room so they could talk about the book. Because that's where you talk about books, in hotel rooms, as opposed to just in the fucking bar. Anyway, she claims when they got up to his room, Walton suddenly pinned her to the bed, placing his hips and legs on her body. He apparently then began forcing kisses on her neck, face, and chest. Jesus Christ, Luke. She claims he screamed for him to stop and tried to free herself, but he held her down, groped her, and he apparently eventually relented and let her get up. As she was walking out, he grabbed her. When she finally opened the door and left, she could hear him say, good to see you. Oh, gross, Luke! If that's true, fucking hell, you creeper. That's fucking brutal. What a fuckwit. Anyway, the Lakers say the allegations against Luke Walton were never brought to the team's attention, that if they had have been, they would have been immediately commenced. They would have immediately commenced an investigation and notified the NBA. So, Jesus. And the Kings are like, ah, fuck, we just hired this guy. What are we doing? I don't know. So there you go. Some other news. Magic Johnson says that he talks to the Lakers every day still. It's almost like I never left. That's pretty good. I'm glad you can tweet, Magic. And the Dallas Mavericks. They posted the largest regional TV rating spike in the NBA, and the international viewership for Mavs games also soared. Pretty good, man. That's what happens when you get an international superstar like Luka Doncic. Love it. Some injury news. Blake Griffin, after being whipped out of the old NBA playoffs today, reckons his knee, while bad, won't cause him to miss any workout time in this offseason. Which, considering his workout seemingly consists of him doing stand-up in Montreal, I mean, you'd hope not. So, nice one. All right, let's wrap up today's knockout games. We had Milwaukee absolutely shit-pumping the Detroit Basketball Pistons, 127-104. But hey, man, like, this was kind of fun. So, look, the big question for this series was, yo, how much of the Bucks stomped them by each game? Well, and I posited 15, 20. Turns out the average margin of victory for Milwaukee was 23.75 points. So I was pretty bang on. I was even actually a little bit under. Who on this Pistons roster had any even a sniff of stopping Giannis? Turns out still, nobody. The key blokes were Blake's knee. Yep, that wasn't great either. So, and the matchups, Andre Drummond and Brook Lopez kind of went hammer and tongs, and neither came out really shining. But anyway, so there you go. Game four was pretty crazy. Pistons came out. They actually look interested. They straight up got out there and jumped away. It's pretty nuts, man. They got away to their biggest lead of the series. It was awesome. The Bucks missed a bunch of free throws in the first half. Blake had a massive dunk. Unfortunately, then he came down a bit weird on his bung knee and limped around for a lot of the rest of the game. So that was pretty shitty. Reggie Jackson, he had a dunk at the just before the halftime break that was all over Ilyasova. Ersan all over Ilyasova. The Pistons led by six at the half, and then the Bucks just came out and did their best Golden State impersonation. With Blake out, Bucks went on a 17-3 run, and it was a 39-23-point third quarter. Jesus! Giannis scored 16 by himself. They shot 14-15 from the free throw line compared to 1-2 for the Pistons. So they kept going to the line. The Pistons just didn't. And there you go, man. Bucks only had 7 points from the bench up to that point as well. So they just went out and fucking smashed it. And then it was the same in the fourth. The Pistons only scored 5 points in the first 7 minutes of the fourth quarter. And eventually it was just all over Red Rover. And a bit of a bloody laugher, which was pretty sad because it was kind of fun while it was a bit of a fight there. But it's also just testament to how fucking good the Bucks are that they realized it was a bit tight. And they came on and put out the clamps right there. 16-point turnaround. Well, a 22-point turnaround, I guess, in the third quarter to be up by 16. It's fucking crazy. And then, obviously, just smoking them in the fourth. It ended up being 32-19 in the fourth quarter. But, as mentioned, the Bucks only had 5 points, basically, in that for the first half of the fourth quarter. So, it was all over. Pretty brutal, man. The Pistons, they shot 41%. They were out-rebounded 36-54, though. Oh, Jesus. When you got a 7'2" athletic dude named Andre Drummond out there, I'm not entirely sure how you get out-rebounded 54-36. Jesus. considering like the main rebounding dude for the goddamn Bucks was Sterling Brown, their starting shooting guard. The fuck are you idiots doing, Detroit? Anyway, Blake only played 28 minutes, looked pretty hobbled most of the time with a giant knee brace on. He fouled out after 28 minutes, obviously. He had 22 points. He was the only one doing anything, really. Shot 8 of 15, went 4 of 6 from downtown. Not bloody bad. 6 assists, 5 rebounds. For a dude who could barely move or jump, that was pretty badass. He dropped a lot of shots short, too.
Just no lift in his legs, mate.
Andre Drummond, I mean, he had 15 points on 16 shots. When you're 7'2", I'm not entirely convinced that you should be shooting under 50%. And 7 of 16 is under 50%. So 15 points, 12 rebounds, 0 blocks for Andre Drummond as well. Come on, man. Just show up. He was a mind-boggling minus 96 for this series. Can you believe that? That is unreal, isn't it? Anyway, for a dude who actually put up some numbers, ugh, that is gross. Elsewhere, Reggie Jackson had 26 points, 9 of 20 shooting. Not bad, 5 of 9 from 3 for Reggie Jackson, 7 assists. He was still a minus 14, though. Just a, you know, happy reminder that Reggie Jackson, even when he's good, he's shit. The Duckman, Luke Kennard. He had 11 points in the end, but 5 of those came in garbage time. Shot 5 of 11. I mean, they moved him back out of the starting lineup. What, for Wayne Ellington? Bruce Brown? I mean, Jesus. Those two shot fucking 3 of 11 between them. 1 of 5 from 3. Fucking hell. Kung Fu Thon. Played 15 minutes. He had 6 points on 6 shots. Rough. Langston Galloway had 10 points as well. Missed a 3 in the third quarter. They probably could have gotten the Pistons back in it, but nah, missed it, and it was just all over from there. Ish Smith was absolutely fucking ish shit, and we'll talk about him later. For the Bucks, they shot 48.8%. 54.4%. from the field, just absolutely crushed it, and 10 of 28 from 3. Just really, really good. Giannis was dead set amazing. 41-9, 3-4. We'll talk about him in a bit. Chris O'Middleton, he had 18 points, 4 rebounds, only needed to play 30 minutes. Lopez, he had 5 blocks. There's incredible back-to-back blocks at the start of the fourth that basically kept the Bucks up and ahead and just cruising along. And it was just like a little bit of a demoralization, really, of the Pistons. So then he had another one just after. So Anya Lopez, pretty bloody good. Sterling Brown had 9 points, 13 rebounds and 6 assists. That's fucking wild. Good on him. Pat Connaughton, 26 minutes for his 4 points. George Hill had 7, but I mean, Nico Mirotic, hello, look at the very thick beard. His thick beard at this goal now can shoot very well. 12 points, 3 of 5 from 3 for Nico Mirotic. And Ersan Ilyasova, 4 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, and 1 dunking upon by Reggie Jackson. And there you go, Detroit with that loss. That's their third straight series playoff sweep. They have now lost an NBA record 14 straight playoff games in a row. Well, that's a bit redundant. Straight 14 playoff games in a row, yeah. 14 playoff games in a row. That's fucking brutal. The storied Pistons franchise. It's not great, is it? Anyway. Milwaukee, I hear it's Algonquin for the good land. The flip side for them is that they sweep for the first time since 1986. It's their first playoff series win since 2001. After they beat the Magic and the Hornets in that playoffs and made it to the Eastern Conference Finals and lost to Allen Iverson's Sixers. But yeah, got to feel pretty good if you're a Bucks fan, because that was an absolute shit pumping, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, mate. Yes, it was.
So let's move on to Houston, Utah. Well, Milwaukee, they join. Well, there we go. We're going to send Detroit off, don't we? The same way we sent off the old Pacers. So, all right, Detroit, it's all over. It's all over, and we better clap him out. Oh, come on, clap. There we go. Thanks for coming, Detroit. Thanks for coming. Don't let the door hit your ass on the way out. All right, thanks. All right, Houston went into Utah, up 3-0 in this series, looking to close out the Jazz. It's a soft J, I believe, the Utah Jazz. Instead, the Houston Rockets got shit-pumped 107-91. Not much of a shit-pumping, really. This was very, very close and very, very fun. Loved it. So the big question has always been in this series, Houston stoked to get to play the Jazz, and it's like, yes, they match up very well. Did we predict rightly yesterday that the Jazz would win this game? Yes, we did. NBA Australia, Nostra fucking Damus. Had to listen to our tips yesterday. We went 2-for-2. what was it? Bucks minus 15, that covered, and then the Jazz plus 3.5. Absolutely smashed that. So you take it. The key blokes are obviously in this one. Harden, he cruised, and the best matchup was Gobert, Capella. Gobert definitely got the better of him today, and Harden versus Mitchell is always great, and it was awesome today. So game four of Houston, Utah was wicked. I mean, Utah jumped out. They had a 14-point lead early on, which is crazy. Ricky Tiki Tata had 15 points in the first half. Jay Crowder had 18 as well. There's a whole mess of points in the paint as well in the first half for Utah, which had really sort of switched the old game script up on Houston. They went, oh, wait, we've got the two biggest dudes on the floor. How about we just score inside a lot? And that's what they did. They had a halftime lead of 6. But the Rockets are really good. They came back out, got a lead. Eric Gordon hit a couple of threes really early. Then Harden got a bullshit foul call, and it was on for young and old, man. Utah were up, and then suddenly they weren't. And you're like, ah, oh, fuck. The Rockets. Ah, oh, I hate them. And that was kind of it. The Jazz, though, they sort of just stuck around. They never really let it get out of hand. And it was really, 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 really fun by the time that Donovan fucking Mitchell got out there and went, oh, yeah, you know, oh, what I might actually do is absolutely crush it. And that's what they did. So the Rockets never led by more than 5 in the middle of the third quarter, and Utah sort of pinged it back to the point where even towards the end of the third quarter, they got back up. Houston, though, they sort of scored a couple more buckets right at the end of the third quarter. And you're kind of like, oh, they got a lead going into the fourth, and then Donovan Mitchell just went, oh, yeah, nah, go fuck yourselves, eh? What do you reckon? And that's what happened then. It was absolutely wild. They absolutely bloody well crushed it in the fourth quarter, did the Jazz. Mitchell got going. The Rockets started missing threes finally. And Donovan Mitchell's slam where he skied and basically grabbed the ball from almost, it seemed like, behind the backboard for the alley-oop was one of the greatest things you'll ever see. And it also ended up being the dagger because, I mean, the Jazz are up 9 with 4 minutes left. That put them up 11, and it was all over basically from there. The Rockets just couldn't quite get back. So that was absolutely wild. Just great shit. Really, really good stuff. So good on you, Jazz. Really stoked that they got this one. Look, you know, a lot of weird shit was going on with the calls for the Harden and stuff and were kind of pissing me off. But, I mean, he ended up with 30 points, did fast Jimmy Harden, shot 8 of 19. He went 6 of 12 from 3, and there was just a couple of ridiculous ones where you just go, fuck it, he's just too good sometimes. But they kind of limited him. They still stick on his left hand crazily, and it's awesome watching, like, Royce O'Neal sit on, like, James Harden's sort of left shoulder, so he can't even do step backs. It's fucking awesome. There were some bullshit calls, as I mentioned, but, I mean, look, the Jazz got away, and they were fine. So you'll take it. Harden, 30 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, 8 turnovers. That was brutal. Chris Paul had 23 points, 7 assists, and 5 steals. He was very good. There's a couple of times where they're just searching for a bucket, searching for a bucket, searching for a bucket, and Chris Paul's like, oh, fuck it. All right, here we go, 2 points, boom. But they were kind of let down by Clint Capella. He had 4 points, 7 rebounds, but shot 1 of 6 and missed a million alley-oops. And putbacks, it seemed like every time they sort of try to flip it to him on the inside, Derek Favors or Rudy Gobert, is that what they were? Or Joe Ingles were there to sort of tap it away. Royce O'Neal as well. He had 1 turnover. He was a minus 20 for the game, was Capella. Jesus. Eric Gordon went 5 of 10 from 3. Missed a couple of late, though, which was pretty tough. He had 16 points total, 5 threes, and missed a free throw. And it's like, oh, shit. Gordo then just didn't hit another shot. So kind of handy. PJ Tucker had 13 points, 3-6 from downtown as well. Daniel House, though, just couldn't hit the fucking side of a barn. 0-6 from 3. That was all of his field goal attempts. Austin Punchable Rivers went 2-6 for his 5 points. Geraldo Green went 0-3. And the Rockets bench combined for 2-15 shooting for 5 points. Jesus, that is brutal. Absolutely brutal. Yep, you'll take that. 2-15 if you're Jazz, aren't you? Jesus. But yeah, so great stuff by the Jazz. They out-rebounded the Rockets 52-34. As mentioned, Donovan fucking Mitchell had 31 points. Shot 11 of 26 overall. 6 of 12 in the fourth quarter, though. Had 19 points in the fourth quarter. He was absolutely unstoppable. A couple of back-to-back threes were just massive to really get the Jazz up and keep them up there. And then, obviously, as mentioned, that alley-oop was fucking wild. Ricky Tiki-Tata, Ricky Rubio, 18 points, 11 assists. Rudy Gobert, the Eiffel Tower. Only played 24 minutes. He was in foul trouble early in the third, but was very good in the fourth quarter. Ended up with 4 points, 9 rebounds, and 3 blocks. Jay Crowder was unstoppable. As mentioned early, he had 18 points in the first half, finished with 23, shot 8 of 13 overall. Hit some big shots too. Jingling Joe Ingles had a rough one. We'll talk about him later. Derek Favors, 12 points, 11 rebounds, 1 block and a steal. He was awesome filling in for Rudy Gobert when he was in foul trouble. Royce O'Neal was also really good. 11 points and 11 rebounds. Great D, staring down PJ Tucker and Eric Gordon and James Harden at different points. He was awesome. I love him. Every little bit of Royce O'Neal out there was very, very good. Unfortunately, came at mostly the expense of our man Jingles, but what can you do? So Houston losing that one in Utah means they go back to Houston up 3-1 in the series and looking to close it out at home. But hey, man, we predicted it. Jazz, they're a tough team. They're a tough out. And there you go. But there you go. So Milwaukee have progressed through to the second round to take on Boston. And Houston and Utah go to a game 5. All right, let's check in on the NBA Australia Approved Performance of the Night.
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
That's a knife, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Flat out shit pumped the Pistons all series. But game 4 was absolutely a Giannis Grecian God special. 41 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, and 4 blocks. Shot 12 of 23. He was absolutely unreal. The best part for the Bucks for this entire series, though, is like this might be the NBA Australia approved performance of this first round. He only averaged 28.3 minutes a game. Giannis going to go into this Boston series fresh as a daisy. I love it. His per 36 averages for the first round were 33.4 points, 15.3 rebounds, 4.5 assists, and 2 blocks. Jesus! He is unreal, isn't he? What about old mate, no mates, though? Who's got no mates today? Oh, did you hear me earlier when I said that Detroit have now lost an NBA record 14 straight playoff games? Well, did you know who their coach is? Dwayne Casey. That's right, man. After losing today, he now has a higher career probability of being swept in the playoffs. He's gone 4 out of 10 series being swept than winning a single playoff game. His winning actual game percentage in the playoffs is 38.2%. So, holy Jesus, Dwayne, that is absolutely brutal. And the Utah Jazz just narrowly avoided joining the 04 Grizz and the 08 Nuggets as the third team ever to win 50 games and then get swept. So good job, Utah. Avoided that ignominy. So what else? Dwayne Casey, definitely old mate, no mates. That's a brutal, brutal record. He's been swept 4 times out of the 10 times he's been in the playoffs now. Jesus. And his actual winning percentage is 0.382. Fuck. It's rough as guts. What about Spud of the Night, though?
Spud of the Night.
Now, look, we mentioned Ish Smith a couple of times during the last... and a little while of this Detroit-Milwaukee series. And it's with a good reason. Because, little fucking Ish over there. As mentioned, as Ish goes, apparently as go the Pistons. And Ish went shit. Oh, bugamoo. How is this for an absolute shit show of a series for Ish Smith? Only really out there for 20 minutes a game. But still managed to put up his shots. Oh, yes, he did. Oh, yes. He ended up shooting 10 of 38 for the series.
Kobe!
Ouch! That is absolutely brutal. So in this game against Milwaukee today, he went 1 of 6. He went 2 of 6 in game 1, 3 of 13 in game 2, 4 of 13, his best showing out of that in game 3. 1 of 6 today, went 1 of 7 from downtown in the entire series, and was just an out-and-out fucking spud. That is absolutely brutal-ish. What are you doing, mate? You're killing us. And what else? Pantsing of the night, pantsing of the series. Thon Kung Fu Thon McCur. Mate, can you stop getting dunked on by Giannis? Look, I know that he's your best mate, and it was lovely that you swapped jerseys after the game and you had a bit of a hug. But come on, man. Just, he's dunking on you and like playing with you at this point, Thon. It's you standing in the middle of the playground going, what's going on? As like 40 different people run past and dack you continuously. That's a pantsing and a half. Thon, stop letting yourself get dunked on. He's not your mate if he keeps dunking on you.
If they pick on you, then they're not your friends, Thon. Come on.
What about better than Lonzo Ball? This one's an easy one for today, isn't it?
Lonzo was the best player in high school. He was the best player in college. You think you'll get to the pros and be like, I made it to the pros. Now I can be average. We're coming for everybody.
We're coming for everybody. As long as everybody is my dad's best mate ripping him off for $2 million and me sitting at home watching everybody else play in the playoffs. Because, I mean, it's the playoffs. So that must mean it's
balling season.
As long as you're not Lonzo Ball. So better than Lonzo Ball is an easy one today. Not Luke Kennard, the duck man. Oh, I love me some Luke Kennard. But I mean, 11 points, five of them in garbage time is not quite better than, well, it's still better than Lonzo Ball because at least Luke Kennard's in the playoffs. But still, this one easily goes to Donovan fucking Mitchell. He's back. 31 points, 19 points in the fourth quarter. Came good at exactly when the Jazz needed him to. Shot 11 of 26 from the field, 3 of 7 from 3. He was everywhere. He was doing everything. It was awesome because he had a shit game up until that point. Hadn't really been shooting very well. Obviously missed the game winner in game, well, the game tie in game 3. And yeah, so Donovan fucking Mitchell, easily better than Lonzo Ball today. 13th pick in the draft. Way to go, Donovan. That was pretty bloody good, mate. All right, we'll be back in a second with Yena right after this.
Hi, this is Ryan Brockoff, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, let's do it. It's time for Yeah Nah, where we take a bunch of NBA storylines, decide whether they're more yeah or more nah. All right, did Igor Kostyukov deserve to get shit-canned by the Suns? Yeah, nah, no, of course he fucking didn't. Look, granted, they didn't look like a great team with too much direction for most of the first half, well, most of this his first year, but they did look pretty bloody good in the second half of the season, especially after the All-Star break. Jesus Christ, and especially the best way to get your franchise and team that is made up almost exclusively of young players in need of stability and coherent organizational direction. The way to get that on the right path is clearly to go and get rid of the fucking coach after 1 year, a year after you did a big song and dance about going through coaches and deciding on a developmental, awesome young coach, and you're like, this guy's the guy, and then you fucking fire him after a year, you idiots! What the fuck? Oh, but we want Monty Williams. Why the fuck would he go coach for you instead of the Lakers? He's got a second thing with the Lakers. Why an... fucking God's name would he go to this organizational shit show there in Phoenix, who are on their fifth coach in 5 fucking years, instead of going to the Lakers? The Suns just fired their coach because they think they've got a shot at the pretty girl, but the pretty girl is 100% not paying any attention to them and 100% going home with the cool rich guy. It's like the Suns got a divorce and were praying that your affair side piece was also going to go get a divorce, even though they've not committed to anything. What an absolute shit show. They fired their coach and GM in consecutive Octobers. They pick up DeAndre Ayton over Luka Doncic this year. They hire Doncic's national team coach and still fucking like went with DeAndre Ayton. They fire him less than a year into the job. What the fuck are they doing? Devin Booker's about to have his fifth new head coach. Devin Booker is 20 fucking 2. Jesus, Suns, sort your shit the fuck out. Anyway, number 2, should Joey Tsai have been fined for supporting his GM? I mean, no, he shouldn't have. The NBA apparently now fucking fining PR statements. But at the same time, he did say wrong and horrible. So, I don't know. NBA got pretty handy legal grounds, I guess. But anyway, next one up is what the Nets are doing just for PR and for show for potential free agents. I mean, you know, yeah, 100%. It's like laying out a sign saying, hey, free agents, come here. We've definitely got your fucking back. Come hang out in Brooklyn. Look, even our owner's going to jump in and our GM. Our GM will fight refs for you. It's like, oh shit, these guys have got my back, I hear. It's also tuning the refs of game five, obviously. So the refs will call that game super tight in Philly. And the league office will be all over the refs for doing that game. So, man, it's pretty good gamesmanship, I think, by the Nets. Nice one. Detroit. All right. Should the Pistons be proud of the way they went out? Oh, yeah, nah. I mean, why would you be proud of putting up a fight for one half of basketball in game four? Fuck off. Get the fuck out of here. What a wildly shit team. Which leads us to think, what's this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Number five. Is there any hope for the Pistons next year? Yeah, I guess. I mean, healthy Blake always kind of will give them a little bit of a crack at being decent. But I mean, when you got both Andre Drummond and Reggie Jackson as easily your sort of worst 2-3 bananas of any playoff team, really. Like, maybe Orlando's T-Ross, Aaron Gordon combo is a little bit worse. I don't know. But still, man, like, they bring on Dwayne Casey, expect a defensive resurgence, but they trailer away fucking Reggie Bullock and a bunch of other dude and Stanley Johnson. So now their best wings are what? Fucking Bruce Brown and Luke Kennard? What the hell is he meant to do there? So that leads us to the next one. Was Milwaukee sweeping the Pistons in any way shocking in any way, shape, or form? Yeah, nah. Fuck no. Unless you didn't watch any of the Bucks or Pistons this year. I mean, sure. I mean, the Pistons literally traded away all their wing dudes who might have slowed down, well, maybe not Giannis, but at least to throw on Middleton, you know? Reggie Bullock, Stanley Johnson. In exchange, they got Thonsong and Shvi Mihalyak. I mean, what the fuck is going on there in Detroit? I think the hope for next year is that Blake is awesome. They maybe trade Andre and Reggie Jackson and figure out how to get slightly better at the 1-5. Then get some wings. I don't know, man, but it is brutal right there. So, which leads me into not talking about the Pistons ever again. That's nice. So how about the unpopular opinion of the day?
Now look at me, please.
Look at me. Apparently on the internet, it's basically been shit on Russell Westbrook day. And the unpopular opinion of the day for me is I fucking love Russell Westbrook. Anyone who listens on the reg knows that. But I also, look, what annoys me about this is, like, I get the way that he plays can be also very detrimental to the Thunder. And that's part of the fucking fun. Like, if you love a player, it doesn't mean you're blind to their deficiencies. And if you point out when they suck, you're not automatically a hater, you know? There's actually gray areas where you can just marvel at what someone is doing, be a fan, also point out where they're being shit, but also how they're being fucking awesome and being underrated sometimes and overrated another way. And that's why I love Rusty. He's fucking everything rolled into one. He plays harder than anyone. And then sometimes that intensity is bad. He shoots too much, but he also leads the league in assists. He cares so much game in, game out, takes things personal that it can sometimes shoot him, like, that'll shoot himself in the foot. And he can be such a fucking bad sport when he says next question that people are like, oh, he's just a prick. But he's also apparently the nicest fucking dude in the world. How good is that? Russell Westbrook is like humanity writ large. And I fucking love it. It's so weird. It's the idea of basketball all wrapped up in all its fucking messy glory. It's awesome. Anyway. So, I love Russell Westbrook. I don't know if that's an unpopular opinion, but apparently today it is. Finally, Tuesday. It's Tuesday at Outback, and you know what that means. Cassowary casserole. That's right, we lost 47 good men trying to get one of these buggers, but we finally got one. So, come on down to Outback Takehouse and wrap your lips around a tasty cassowary casserole. Only at Outback. And today's Flame Grill take is, thanks to the ownership of Robert Sarver, the Phoenix Suns are now the worst franchise in the NBA. Only at Outback. Is that a flame grill take or is that just the truth? yeah, that might just be the truth. Like, we don't really have any train wreck other ones. Like, Memphis are a bit of a shit show here and there. Charlotte just a kind of mediocre and kind of suck. But the Suns are a fucking laughing stock at this point, aren't they? I mean, the Cavs won a title like 3 years ago, so they're fucking fine. Phoenix have never won a title. They had one of the most entertaining fucking brands of basketball for years and years and years. And then this decade has been an absolute fucking shit show. And you can trace it all back to one dude, the owner. Just saying. All right, we'll be back in a second with Australian Player Watch and the hairy, sweaty guy, the Patty Mills Game Day Baller Game Day Twitter check-in and some game previews right after this.
This is David Anderson. You're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, we're back. Australian Player Watch, let's do it. We had Jinglin' Joe Ingles. As mentioned earlier, not having a great run has not been very good this series. The Jazz made their big run to get back in this game without him out on the court. So for game four, he only played 23 minutes, had 3 points. That was one of the three threes that he hit. Well, he hit one of three threes. There we go. 1 of 4 from the field in general. 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal, and 2 turnovers. And just sort of looks a little bit off. Just not looking for his shot at all. And not playing quite bang on defense that you kind of expect from him at the moment as well. So it's a bit weird. He's just like shooting horribly. And it's really sort of spun him for a bit of a loop, I reckon. Hopefully Jingles will bounce back in game five and we'll have ourselves a bit of a series. He loves smashing Houston as well, which is kind of the weird part. He averaged like 15, 5, and 5 against them last year. So anyway, and what about Kung Fu Thon, 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 Thon in his game four? He was out there for 15 minutes. He had 6 points. Went 2 of 6 from the field, including 0 of 3 from 3. What do you have? 3 rebounds, 1 turnover, 5 fouls. Love you. It's great. Good stuff, Don. But for the series, I mean, as mentioned, he didn't hit a 3 for the entire series. He went 0 of 12 from 3 for the series, bringing his career playoff 3-point mark to 8 of 51. Jesus. Anyway, for the series, he averaged 5.5 points, shooting 26.9% from the field. As mentioned, 0 of 12 from 3 for 0% from downtown. 2.5 rebounds a game, 1 assist and 1 block. And you'd expect him to have bounced back and been a little bit better, especially with Blake Griffin being out the first two games. But Thon is very inconsistent and really hoping that he has a really good offseason. Works on that shot a bit more. Comes back and smashes it for Detroit next year. Nice one. All right, the Mark Breaky Memorial Sweaty Hairy Guy of this week goes to Brook Lopez once more. Love this. No wonder he didn't hit a 3 in this game. He was only out there for like, I don't know, not a giant amount of time. 26 points, but boy, did Brook Lopez get a sweat on. No wonder he gets so many blocks, right? Blokes are just slipping on the sweat near him and releasing the ball lower than usual. Like, it's a bit of a surprise. And you just look at his hair and you go, ah, oh, just imagine the smell of that. Smell like a wet sheep. His chest hair is so thick you need to carve it off with an electric kitchen knife. I absolutely love it. So, Brook Lopez, you are our Mark Breaky Memorial Sweaty Guy of this week. All right, the Patty Mills Game Day Baller Game Day Twitter check-in is a pretty good one. It's an Instagram check-in for Patty Mills today. If you're following Patty on Instagram, it's a pretty good one because it's just a whole bunch of photos of him. And today is him and the missus, his fiance, wandering in to, I think that was game four. And looking very, very, very schmick, Patty. All he says is hashtag NBA playoffs. He's wearing a sweet hat. What's she wearing? Is that a Gucci belt? Yeah, I don't know. But everyone's looking very, 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 very slick in that one. So go check it out. It's very awesome. It's a fucking fire squad right there. Good job, Patty. There's all of his fits, basically, as he's going into these games. Last two shots have been, because they've been in San Antonio, have been with the missus there. She's looking fire as well. So good job, Patty. Getting work done. Looking great. All right, so let's do some game previews for tomorrow's games. Seriously, follow Patty on Instagram. It's awesome. All right, let's do it. Game previews.
Game previews.
Thanks, Inadvertent Bane.
Not a problem. How's everything going?
Oh, yeah. The squid's smashing it. He's cuter in a button. You know, it's all good stuff. So not going to complain, mate. Not going to complain. All right, let's do a look at the odds and a pick and preview for all the games tomorrow. We've got some pretty bloody good ones. We've got 3 series potential enders tomorrow, which is pretty crazy. So let's have a look. We've got Orlando and the Toronto Raptors playing game 5 in Toronto. Remember, Orlando won in Toronto in game 1. Unfortunately, They are 11.5-point underdogs this time around. The Raptors going into a closeout game. 11.5-point favorites at home. You know what? I think I might take the Magic in this one just because plus 11.5 in a closeout game. It's either going to be closer or it's going to be an absolute fucking smashing. And I feel like Orlando have just enough in them to like make this maybe like an 8-to-10-point loss. Toronto will win, but I feel like the Orlando Magic might just cover. Plus 11.5 is a little bit too much, so give me that one. Brooklyn go to Philly for their game 5 in another potential closeout game. And the Nets are 8.5-point underdogs on the road in Philly. And as mentioned, I feel like the refs are going to really tighten the screws on this one. So I'm going to take the Nets plus 8.5 as well. It just seems like a little bit too much for my blood. So I will take the Nets plus 8.5. Look, Philly will probably win this, and that'll be all she wrote for Brooklyn. But don't forget, Brooklyn did win a game in Philly and played them very, very close until they got robbed by the refs in game 4. So this really could easily be 2-all. So I'm going to take 8.5 for Brooklyn. I like their chances, at least of covering. I also like the over. Oh, wait, no, that actually might be a little bit much. Wait, I like the over on one of them. Okay, oh yeah, OKC, Portland. Anyway, Spurs going to Denver for game 5 of that 2-2 series. Spurs, 6-point underdogs. Everyone's like, oh, the Nuggets have figured it out. So the Nuggets being 6-point favorites at home seems like a lot considering that San Antonio have already won there. So I'm going to take the Spurs plus 6. Denver might win this, but I've got a feeling this one's going to be very, very close in Denver. I've got a feeling. They might win, but I'm not sure if it's going to be by more than 6. So give me the Spurs plus 6. And finally, the OKC Thunder take on the Portland Trailblazers in Portland. And this one, after so much, you know, of them being written off, I've got a feeling the Thunder bounce back and win this. So I'm going to take the Thunder plus 3.5. It's going to be a very, very fun game. I've got the over in this one as well. Plus, the over is 219. So I'm going to go the over on that too. There's a bit of a tip for you. So there you go. To recap, I'm going to take the Magic plus 11.5, the Nets plus 8.5, the Spurs plus 6, and the Thunder plus 3.5. I'm taking all the underdogs. Pretty good. I just feel like these games are going to be a little bit closer than those lines represent, so it should be pretty good. But we should have like a couple of really good ones. Nets Philly has probably been the best series so far. Spurs Nuggets is a close second, and Thunder Blazers has been fucking great too. So yeah, the less I say about Magic Raptors the better. So that'll be fun as hell. All right, good stuff. Well, we're gonna wrap all those games up tomorrow. It's gonna be great, I hope. Bloody well better be. That's it. So we're back tomorrow. Make sure you're following NBA Australia on Twitter, Instagram, Facey, all that good stuff. We're all over the socials during the games. Lots of fun stuff. You know, it's what we do. Check us a rating and review on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, whatever Android app you use. Smash 5 stars for us, would you? Helps out heaps. Go tell a mate as well. Follow us on Spotify. Check us out on Stitcher. Wherever you get podcasts, we're all over it. Big thanks to From Oslo for the intro and outro song, but go check out their new band, House Hats. They're the best band in Australia right now, especially considering we're no longer allowed to listen to Smith Street Band. Their debut album, Running Out of Time, is out now. Go give it a... go wrap your ears around that on Spotify and Apple Music and all that good shit. I bought the vinyl the other day. It's unreal. Also, big thanks to Fascinator, Ramshackle Army, Iowa Sex Jedi, Green Green Green, and Dozers for all the tunes you heard throughout the show. Give them all a smash on Bandcamp and Facey and support them the way they support us. And remember, NBA Australia supports Australian bands! All right, man, that's it for today. We're going to close out with a brand new Jingles HR as Joe Ingles takes on your HR questions. And we will catch you tomorrow, you dickheads. This is NBA Australia saying, later, Lord. Alright, g'day you jingler jokers. Joe Ingles here, head of Jingles HR, the official HR firm of NBA Australia. Answering all your workplace related questions. Yes, that's right, when I'm not sinking threes or trying to talk crap to James Harden, I'm the best HR professional you'll find. Nobody knows HR like the jingler. So, let's get to this week's question, shall we? It comes from Billy in Oklahoma City. Hi Joe. Just a quick question for you about management and how you should look at getting people in your department to respect you and pay attention to your directives. I've had a lot of trouble getting some specific underlings to listen to me and follow my orders, even though I'm the boss. I think we've got a great collection of people working here, and I'd like to see us succeed at a better level. But it does seem like some of my charges need motivation to work for them. So, I mean, sure, we haven't been able to transfer our success when trying to operate outside of our immediate area. For three straight years, every time we've ventured outside our state and tried to do business, we've failed dismally. So I'll shoulder some of the blame about not being too prepared. But I have subordinates who just don't listen to me, others who make fun of my hair, and other employees who appear to be very good but end up freelancing to boost their own worthwhile, ignoring my directives saying I don't know shit. Do you have any tips for what I could do? Yours, Billy, Oklahoma City. Oh, geez, thanks for writing in, Billy. Sounds like you're in a bit of a pickle. I mean, look, most supervisory management roles are tough because not only do you need to have the respect of the people who work for you, but you also need to be able to discipline them when the time comes. And, you know, look, say they've ignored your internal memos. You have to take that into your own hands and discipline them. I mean, just the other day, I asked Cheryl, my assistant HR manager, to sort out a bunch of paperwork for me. She called me a drongo and walked away. So I had to sit her down in an arbitration meeting to hash out any problems we had. It turns out she didn't appreciate the way I was going about asking her to do things, and we formulated a set of KPIs for our ongoing working relationship. So, Billy, I'd suggest that you do the same. If your underlings aren't paying attention, you need to go to HR, spell out the problems, then get them in a room one-on-one with an arbiter, figure out their grievances, and as well as that, how you can work together to fix them. See, it's a two-way street. It all comes down to multifaceted communication and having daily KPIs to make sure you hit your combination targets and making sure everyone is on the same page. That's crucial to any organization. And I think you'll find out that it really helps your working relationships immensely too. So there you go, Billy. It's pretty easy. If they're churning out, you need to figure out why, get their attention, and then get their respect by being a good boss. You got to understand their motivations, and that should motivate you. What I would heartily oppose, though, is getting them in a headlock and yelling at them. Don't do that. Going down for a sesh down the pub, that's also fine, though. So, after all, as we say here at Jingles HR, if your subordinates aren't listening to you, you're not speaking clearly enough. Okay, so there you go, Billy. Get out there, mend some fences, and I hope they start listening to you and that advice helps. And that's all we've got time for this week. We'll be back next week with Jingles HR on NBA Australia. And until then, I've been Joe Ingles. Get back to work and get a dog up ya. Yeah.